This is Audible.
McGraw-Hill Audio presents How to Make Money in Stocks, A Winning System in Good Times or Bad, 3rd edition. Written by William J. O'Neill. Read by Chris Ryan. Introduction: Learning from the Greatest Winners. In the following chapters, I will show you exactly how to pick big winners in the stock market and nail down the profits in them, as well as how to substantially reduce your losses and mistakes. Many people who dabble in stocks either have mediocre results or lose money because of their lack of knowledge. But no one has to lose money. You can definitely learn to invest wisely. This book will provide you with the investment understanding, skills, and methods you need to become a more successful investor. I believe that most people in this country, and many others throughout the free world, young and old, regardless of profession, education, background, or economic position, positively should own common stock. This book isn't written for the elite, but for the millions of guys and gals everywhere who want a chance to be better off financially. You are never too old or too young to start investing. You can start small. If you're a typical working person or a beginning investor, it doesn't take a lot of money to start. You can begin with as little as $500 to $1,000 and add to it as you earn and save more money. I began with the purchase of just 5 shares of Procter & Gamble when I was only 21 and fresh out of school. You live in a fantastic time of unlimited opportunity, an era of outstanding new ideas, emerging industries, and new frontiers. The opportunities are out there for everyone. You are now in a continually changing new America. We lead the world in high technology, the internet, medical advancements, computer software, military capability, and innovative new entrepreneurial companies. The communist socialist system and concept of a command economy is now relegated to the ash heap of history. Our system of freedom and opportunity serves as a model of success for most countries in the world. It is not enough today for you to just work and earn a salary, to do the things you want to do, to go the places you want to go, to have the things you want to have in your life. You absolutely must save and invest intelligently. The second income from your investments and the net profits you can make will let you reach your goals and provide real security. This book will just change your whole life. Secret tip: the first step in learning to pick big stock market winners is for you to examine leading big winners of the past to learn all the characteristics of the most successful stocks. You will learn from this observation what type of price patterns these stocks developed just before their spectacular price advances. Other key factors you will discover include what the quarterly earnings of these companies were at the time, what the annual earnings histories of these organizations had been in the prior 3 years, what amount of trading volume was present, what degree of relative price strength occurred in the price of the stocks before their enormous success, and how many shares of common stock were outstanding in the capitalization of each company. You'll also learn that many of the greatest winners had significant new products or new management, and that many were tied to strong industry group moves caused by important changes occurring in an entire industry. It's easy to conduct this type of practical, common-sense analysis of all past successful leaders. I have already completed such a comprehensive study. In our historical analysis, we selected the greatest winning stocks in the stock market each year in terms of percentage increase for the year, spanning the past half century. We call the study the Model Book of Greatest Stock Market Winners. It covers the period from the 1950s through 2000 and analyzes in detail over 600 of the biggest winning companies in recent stock market history. Super stocks such as Texas Instruments, whose price soared from $25 to $250 from January 1958 through May 1960. Xerox, which escalated from $160 to the equivalent of $1,340 from March 1963 to June 1966. Syntex, which leaped from $100 to $570 in only 6 months during the last half of 1963. Dome Petroleum and Prime Computer, which respectively advanced 1,000% and 1,595% in the 1978 to 1980 stock market. Limited Stores, which wildly excited lucky shareowners with a 3,500% increase between 1982 and 1987. And Cisco Systems, which advanced from a split-adjusted 10 cents to $82 between October 1990 and March 2000. Home Depot and Microsoft both increased more than 20 times during the 1980s and early 1990s. Home Depot is one of the all-time great performers, jumping 20-fold in less than 2 years from its initial public offering in September 1981, and then climbing another 10 times from 1988 to 1992. All of these companies offered exciting new products and concepts. Would you like to know the common characteristics and rules of success we discovered from this intensive study of all past stock market leaders? It's all covered in the next few chapters, and in a simple, easy-to-remember formula we have named Can Slim. Each letter in the words Can Slim stands for one of the seven chief characteristics of these greatest winning stocks at their early developing stages, just before they made huge profits for their shareholders. Write the formula down and repeat it several times so you won't forget it. The reason Can Slim continues to work, cycle after cycle, is because it is based solely on the reality of how the stock market actually works, rather than our personal opinion, or anyone else's, including Wall Street's. Further, human nature at work in the market simply doesn't change. So Can Slim does not get outmoded as fads, fashions, and economic cycles come and go. It will beat big egos and personal opinions every time. You can definitely learn how to pick big winners in the stock market, and you can become part owner in the best companies in the world. So let's get started right now. Here's a sneak preview of Can Slim. C. Current quarterly earnings per share. The higher the better. A. Annual earnings increases. Look for significant growth. N. New products, new management, new highs. Buying at the right time. S. Supply and demand. Shares outstanding plus big volume demand. L. Leader or laggard. Which is your stock? I. Institutional sponsorship. Follow the leaders. M. Market direction. How to determine it. Please begin immediately with Chapter 1. Go for it. You can do it. Chapter 1. C equals current quarterly earnings per share. The higher the better. Dell Computer, America Online, Cisco Systems. Why, among the thousands of stocks that trade each day, did these three perform so well during the 1990s? And what traits, among the hundreds that can move stocks up and down, did they all have in common? These are not idle questions. The answers unlock the secret to true success in the stock market. Our study of all the stock market superstars from the past half century found they did indeed share common characteristics. However, none stood out as boldly as the profits each big winner reported in the latest quarter or two before its major price advance. In fact, if you look down a list of the market's biggest winners, you'll instantly see the relationship between booming profits and booming stocks. And you'll see why our studies have concluded that the stocks you select should show a major percentage increase in current quarterly earnings per share, the most recently reported quarter, when compared to the prior year's same quarter. Seek stocks showing huge current earnings increases. In our models of the 600 best-performing stocks from 1952 to 2001, 3 out of 4 showed earnings increases averaging more than 70% in the latest publicly reported quarter before they began their major advances. The remaining 25% that did not show solid current quarterly earnings increases did so the very next quarter and had an average earnings increase of 90%. If the best stocks had profit increases of this magnitude before they advanced rapidly in price, why should you settle for anything less? You may find that only 2% of all stocks listed on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange will show earnings gains of this size. But remember, you're looking for stocks that are exceptional, not lackluster. Don't worry, they're out there. However, as with any search, there can be traps and pitfalls along the way, and you need to know how to avoid them. The earnings per share, EPS number, you want to focus on, is calculated by dividing a company's total after-tax profits by the number of common shares outstanding. This percentage change in EPS is the single most important element in stock selection today. The greater the percentage increase, the better. And yet, during the internet boom of the late 1990s, some people bought stocks based on big stories of profits and riches to come, while most internet and dot-com companies had only shown deficits to date. Given that companies like AOL and Yahoo were actually showing earnings, risking your hard-earned money in other unproven stocks was simply not necessary. AOL and Yahoo were the real leaders at that time. When the inevitable market correction, downturn, hit, lower-grade, more speculative companies with no earnings rapidly suffered the largest declines. You don't need that added risk. I am continually amazed at how some professional money managers, let alone individual investors, buy common stocks with the current reported quarter's earnings flat, no change, or down. There is absolutely no good reason for a stock to go anywhere in a big, sustainable way if current earnings are poor. Even profit gains of 5% to 10% are insufficient to fuel a major price movement in a stock. It's also more likely for a company showing a mere increase of 8 or 10% to suddenly report lower earnings the next quarter. Unlike some institutional investors, who may be restricted by the size of their funds, individual investors have the luxury of investing in only the very best stocks in each bull cycle. While some of these stocks with no earnings, like Amazon.com and Priceline.com, had big moves in 1998 to 1999, most investors were better off buying stocks like America Online and Charles Schwab that had strong earnings. Following the can-slim strategy's emphasis on earnings ensures an investor will always be led to the strongest stocks in any market cycle, regardless of any temporary, highly speculative bubbles or euphoria. But remember, don't buy on earnings growth alone. We'll cover the other key factors in the chapters that follow. The key question for the winning investor must always be, how much are the current quarter's earnings per share up, in percentage terms, from the same quarter the year before? Let's say your company discloses that sales climbed 10% and net income advanced 12%. Sounds good, right? Not necessarily. You shouldn't be concerned with the company's total net income. You don't own the whole organization. You own shares in it. The company might have issued additional shares or diluted the common stock in other ways. So while net income may be up 12%, earnings per share, your main focus as an investor, may have inched up only 5% or 6%. You must be able to see through slanted presentations. Don't let their use of words like sales and net income divert your attention from the truly vital facts like current quarterly earnings. To further clarify this point, you should always compare a company's earnings per share to the same quarter a year earlier, not to the prior quarter, to avoid any distortion due to seasonality. In other words, you don't compare the December quarter's earnings to the prior September quarter's earnings per share. Rather, compare the December quarter of this year to the December quarter of last year for a more accurate evaluation. The winning investor should avoid the trap of being influenced by non-recurring profits. If a computer maker reports earnings for the last quarter that include non-recurring profits from activities such as the sale of real estate, this portion of earnings should be subtracted from the report. Such earnings represent a one-time, non-recurring event, and not the true ongoing profitability of corporate operations. Ignore the earnings that result from these types of events. Whether you're a new or experienced investor, I would advise against buying any stock that doesn't show earnings per share up at least 18% or 20% in the most recent quarter versus the same quarter the year before. In our study of the greatest winning companies, we found that they all had this in common prior to their big price moves. Many successful investors use 25% or 30% as their minimum earnings parameter. To be even safer, insist that both of the last two quarters show significant earnings gains. During bull markets, major market uptrends, I prefer to concentrate on stocks that show powerful earnings gains, from 40% to 500% or more. You have thousands of stocks to choose from. Why not buy the very best merchandise available? To further sharpen your stock selection process, look ahead to the next quarter or two and check the earnings that were reported for those same quarters the previous year. See if the company will be coming up against unusually large or small earnings achieved a year ago. When the unusual year earlier results are not due to seasonal factors, this step may help you anticipate a strong or poor earnings report in the coming months. Also, be sure to check consensus earnings estimates, projections that combine the earnings estimates of a large group of analysts, for the next several quarters, as well as the next year or two, to make sure the company is projected to be on a positive track. Some earnings estimate services even show an estimated annual earnings growth rate for the next 5 years for many companies. Many individuals and even some institutional investors, mutual funds, banks, and insurance companies, buy stocks with earnings down in the most recently reported quarter just because they like a company and think its stock price is cheap. Usually they accept the story that earnings will rebound strongly in the near future. In some cases this may be true, but in many cases it isn't. The point is, you have the choice of investing in thousands of companies, many of which are actually showing strong operating results. You don't have to accept promises of earnings that may never occur. It has been suggested in past years that Japanese firms concentrate more on long-term profits than current earnings per share. They spend money on projects that will strengthen the company's future, such as research and development. Their concept is sound, and one that better-managed organizations in the United States, a minority of companies, also follow. It's how leading companies create colossal earnings increases. They spend years on the research and development of superior new products. But don't be confused. As an individual investor, you can afford to wait until the company proves its efforts have been successful by showing real earnings improvement. Requiring that current quarterly earnings be up a hefty amount is just another smart way the intelligent investor can reduce the risk of mistakes in stock selection. Many older American corporations have mediocre management that continually produces second-rate earnings results. I call them the entrenched maintainers, or caretaker management. These are the companies you want to avoid until someone has the courage to change top management. Not coincidentally, they are generally the companies that strain to pump up their current earnings a dull 8% or 10%. True growth companies with outstanding new products or improved management do not have to maximize current results. Our analysis of the most successful stocks also showed that, in almost every case, earnings growth accelerated sometime in the 10 quarters before a towering price move began. In other words, it's not just increased earnings that cause a big move, it's also the size of the increase plus the improvement from the company's prior percentage rate of earnings growth. Wall Street now calls many of these earnings surprises. If a company's earnings are up 15% a year and suddenly begins spurting 40% to 50% or more, it usually creates the conditions for important stock price improvement. Strong, improved quarterly earnings should always be supported by sales growth of at least 25% for the latest quarter, or at least an acceleration in the rate of sales percentage improvement over the last three quarters. Many newer issues, initial public offerings, may show the last 8, 10, or 12 quarters of huge sales increases, sometimes averaging 100% or more. Some professional investors bought Waste Management at $50 in early 1998 because earnings had jumped 3 quarters in a row, from 24% to 75% and 268%. However, sales were only up 5%. Several months later, the stock collapsed to $15 a share. What this demonstrates is that earnings can be inflated for a few quarters by cost reduction or reducing R&D, depreciation, reserves, advertising, or other constructive activities. However, to be sustainable, earnings growth must be supported by sales increases. Such was not the case with Waste Management. It also helps improve your batting average if your stock selections show the latest quarter's after-tax profit margins are either at or near a new high. Just as it's important to recognize when quarterly earnings growth is accelerating, it's also important to know when earnings begin to decelerate and significantly slow down. By this I mean if a company growing at a 50% rate suddenly reports earnings gains of only 15%, that usually spells trouble, and you probably want to avoid it. When this happens, the stock frequently has either topped out permanently, regardless of what Wall Street analysts say, or its rate of upward progress will flatten into a lengthy and unrewarding period of price consolidation, sideways price movement, without further price progress up. However, before turning negative on a company's earnings, I prefer to see 2 quarters of material slowdown, usually a 2/3 decline from the prior several quarters' rate of growth. Even the best organizations can have one slow quarter every once in a while. Understanding the principle of earnings acceleration or deceleration is essential. Securities analysts who recommend stocks because of an absolute level of earnings expected for the following year could be looking at the wrong set of facts. A stock that earned $5 per share and expects to report $6 the next year, a favorable 20% increase, could mislead you unless you know the previous trend in the percentage rate of earnings change. What if previously it was up 60%? This partially explains why so few investors make significant money following the buy and sell recommendations of securities analysts. Logarithmic scale graphs are of great value in analyzing stocks because acceleration or deceleration in the percentage rate of quarterly earnings increases can be seen very clearly. Log graphs show percentage changes accurately, since 1 inch anywhere on the price or earnings scale represents the same percentage change. This is not true of arithmetically scaled charts. For example, on an arithmetically scaled chart, a 100% price increase from $10 to $20 a share would show the same space change as a 50% increase from $20 to $30 a share. In contrast, a logarithmic graph would show the 100% increase as twice as large as the 50% increase. You, as a do-it-yourself investor, can take the latest quarterly earnings per share, EPS, along with the prior 3 quarters EPS, and plot them on a logarithmic scale graph to get a clear picture of earnings acceleration or deceleration. The plotting of the most recent 12-month earnings each quarter should, in the best companies, put the earnings per share point close to or already at new highs. For additional validation, check the earnings of other companies in your stock's industry group. If you can't find one or two other impressive stocks in the group displaying strong earnings, chances are you may have selected the wrong investment. Where to find current quarterly earnings reports? Quarterly corporate earnings statements are published every day in the business sections of most local newspapers and financial publications. Investors Business Daily goes one step further and separates all new earnings reports into companies with up earnings from those reporting down results, so you can easily see who produced excellent gains and who didn't. Chart services like Daily Graphs, Daily Graphs Online, and others also show earnings reported during the week, as well as the most recent earnings figures for every stock they chart. Once you locate the percentage change in earnings per share when compared to the same year-ago quarter, also compare the percentage change in EPS on a quarter-by-quarter basis. looking at the March quarter and then at the June, September, and December quarters will tell you if a company's earnings growth is accelerating or decelerating. You now have the first critical rule for improving your stock selection. Current quarterly earnings per share should be up a major percentage, at least 25% to 50% or more, over the same quarter the previous year. The best companies might show earnings up 100% to 500% or more. A mediocre 10% or 12% isn't enough. When picking winning stocks, it's the bottom line that counts. Chapter 2. A equals annual earnings increases. Look for significant growth. Any company can report a good earnings quarter every once in a while, and as we've seen, strong current quarterly earnings are critical to picking most of the market's biggest winners. But it's not enough. To ensure that the latest results aren't just a flash in the pan, and that the company you are looking at is a quality one, you must insist on more proof. The way to do that is by reviewing the company's annual earnings growth rate. Look for annual earnings per share that have increased every year for the last 3 years. You normally don't want the second year's earnings down, even if the following year rebounds and is in new high ground. It is the combination of strong earnings in the last few quarters plus a record of solid growth in recent years that creates a superb stock, or at least one with a higher probability for success. Select stocks with 25% to 50% or more annual growth rates. The annual rate of earnings growth in the companies you pick should be 25%, 50%, even 100% or more. Between 1980 and 2000, the median annual growth rate of all outstanding stocks in our study at their early emerging stage was 36%. 3 out of 4 of the biggest winners showed at least some positive annual growth rate over the 5 years preceding the stock's big run-up. A typical earnings per share progression for the 5 years preceding the stock's move might be something like 70 cents, $1.15, $1.85, $2.65, and $4. In a few cases, you might accept one down year in the last 5, as long as the following year's earnings quickly recover and move back to new high ground. It's possible that a company could earn $4 a share 1 year, $5 the next, $6 the next, and then $2 a share. If the next annual earnings statement was, say, $2.50 per share versus the prior year's $2, it would still not be a good report, despite the 25% increase. The only reason it seems attractive is that the previous $2 a share year was so depressed that any improvement would look good. The point is, profits are recovering slowly and are still well below the company's annual peak earnings of $6 a share. The consensus earnings estimate for the next year should also be up. The greater the increase, the better. Remember, however, that estimates are opinions, and opinions may be wrong. Actual reported earnings are facts. Also, you should not ignore a company's annual return on equity, ROE. Our studies show that the greatest winning stocks of the past 50 years had ROEs of at least 17%. Return on equity helps separate the well-managed companies from the poorly managed ones. Additionally, look for growth stocks showing annual cash flow per share greater than actual earnings per share by at least 20%. Through our research, we've developed an additional factor that has proved to be important in selecting growth stocks, the stability and consistency of annual earnings growth over the past 3 years. Our stability measurement, which is expressed on a scale from 1 to 99, is calculated differently than most statistics. The lower the figure, the more stable the past earnings record. The figures are calculated by plotting quarterly earnings for the past 5 years and fitting a trend line around the plot points to determine the degree of deviation from the basic trend. Growth stocks with steady earnings tend to show a stability figure below 20 or 25. Companies with stability ratings over 30 are more cyclical and a little less dependable in terms of their growth. All other things being equal, you may want to look for stocks showing a greater degree of sustainability, consistency, and stability in past earnings growth. When the quarterly earnings are plotted on a log chart for several years, the earnings line should be on a nearly straight line, consistently moving up. Earnings stability numbers are usually shown immediately after a company's annual growth rate, although most analysts and investment services do not bother to make the calculation. We show them in many of our institutional products, as well as in Daily Graphs and Daily Graphs Online, designed for individual investors. If you restrict your stock selections to ventures with proven growth records, you avoid the hundreds of investments with erratic histories or cyclical recoveries in profits. Such stocks may top out as they approach the peaks of their prior earnings cycle. History demonstrates that most bull, up market cycles last 2 to 4 years and are followed by a recession or bear, down market. Then another bull market starts. In the beginning phase of a new bull market, growth stocks are usually the first to lead and make new price highs. Basic industry groups such as steel, chemical, paper, rubber, machinery, and other so-called cyclical stocks usually lag. Young growth stocks will usually dominate for at least 2 bull cycles. Then the emphasis may change for a short period to turnarounds, cyclicals, or other newly improved sectors. While 3 out of 4 big market winners in the past were growth stocks, 1 in 4 was a turnaround situation. In 1982, Chrysler and Ford were 2 such spirited turnaround plays. Cyclical and turnaround opportunities led in the market waves of 1953 to 1955, 1963 to 1965, and 1974 to 1975. Cyclicals like paper, aluminum, autos, chemicals, and plastics returned to the fore in 1987. Home building stocks, also cyclical, have led in other cycles. IBM was a great example of a turnaround situation in 1994. Yet even in these periods, there were some pretty dramatic young growth stocks available. Basic industry stocks in the United States often represent older, more inefficient industries, some of which are no longer internationally competitive and growing. They do not represent America's future. Rallies in cyclical stocks tend to be short-lived and prone to falter at the first hint of an earnings slowdown. Should you decide to buy strong turnaround stocks, the annual earnings growth rate could be 5% to 10%. Requiring a turnaround company to show 2 consecutive quarters of sharp earnings recovery should put the earnings for the latest 12 months into or very near new high ground. Look at the 12 months earnings line on a stock chart. The sharper the upswing, the better. If the profit upswing is so dramatic that it reaches a new high, sometimes 1 quarter of earnings turnaround will suffice. Using 3-year annual earnings per share growth criteria will help you weed out 80% of stocks in any industry group. Keep in mind that an annual growth record doesn't necessarily mean a company is a growth stock. In fact, many so-called growth stocks report substantially slower growth than they did in earlier market periods. A company with an outstanding 3-year growth record of 30%, but whose earnings in the last several quarters have slowed significantly to 10% and 15%, acts like a fully mature growth stock. Older and larger organizations often show slowed growth and in most cases should be avoided. From 1998 to 2000, McDonald's Corporation had a 3-year growth rate of only 10%, which is substandard in today's growth stock markets. A standout stock needs a sound growth record during recent years, but also a strong current earnings record in the last few quarters. It is the powerful combination of these 2 critical factors, rather than one or the other, which creates a super stock, or at least one that has a higher chance for true success. The fastest way to find a company with strong and accelerating current earnings and solid 3-year growth is by checking the earnings per share, EPS rating, provided for every stock listed in Investor's Business Daily. The EPS rating is defined as a proprietary rating that measures a company's two most recent quarters' earnings growth rate compared to the same quarters 1 year prior. Then the company's three-year annual growth rate is examined. The results are compared to all other publicly traded companies and rated on a scale from 1 to 99, with 99 being best. An EPS rating of 99 means that a company has outperformed 99% of all other companies in terms of both annual and recent quarterly earnings performance. If an initial public offering doesn't show a three-year earnings record, look for the last five or six quarterly earnings reports to be up a huge amount and even more quarters of enormous sales increases. One or two quarters of profitability is frequently not enough and represents a less proven stock that might fall apart somewhere down the line. If you're like most investors, you've probably learned that the most important thing you need to know about a stock is its price-to-earnings, P/E ratio. Well, prepare yourself for a bubble-bursting surprise. While P/E ratios have been used for years by analysts as their basic measurement tool in deciding if a stock is undervalued, has a low P/E, and should be bought, or is overvalued, has a high P/E, and should be sold, our ongoing analysis of the most successful stocks from 1952 to present shows that P/E ratios were not a relevant factor in price movement and have very little to do with whether a stock should be bought or sold. P/Es are an end effect, not a cause. Much more crucial, we found, was the percentage increase in earnings per share. To say a security is undervalued because it's selling at a low P/E or because it's in the low range of its historical P/E is nonsense. Primary consideration should be given to whether the rate of change in earnings is substantially increasing or decreasing. From 1953 through 1985, the average P/E ratio for the best-performing stocks at their early emerging stage was 20. The P/E of the Dow Jones Industrial Average at the time averaged 15. While advancing, the biggest winners expanded their P/Es by 125% to about 45. During the 1990 to 1995 period, the real leaders began with an average P/E of 36 and expanded into the 80s. Since these are averages, the beginning P/E range for most big winners was 25 to 50, and the P/E expansions varied from 60 to 115. The late 1990s market euphoria saw these valuations increase to even greater levels. Value buyers missed all of these tremendous investments. While the above-mentioned numbers are just averages, they do strongly suggest that if you were not willing to pay an average of 25 to 50 times earnings, or even much more, for growth stocks, you automatically eliminated most of the best investments available. Thus, you would have missed out on Microsoft, Cisco Systems, Home Depot, and America Online during their periods of greatest market performance. High P/Es were found to occur because of bull markets. Low P/Es, with the exception of cyclical stocks, generally occurred because of bear markets. In a roaring bull market, don't overlook a stock just because its P/E seems too high. It could be the next great stock market winner. Never buy a stock solely because the P/E ratio makes it look like a bargain. There are usually good reasons why P/Es are low, and there's no golden rule in the stock market that protects a stock that sells at 8 or 10 times earnings from going even lower and selling at 4 or 5 times earnings. Many years ago, when I first began to study the market, I bought Northrop at 4 times earnings and watched in disbelief as the stock declined to a P/E ratio of 2. Many Wall Street analysts put a stock on their buy list because it's selling in the low end of its historical P/E range. They'll also recommend a stock when the price starts to drop, thereby lowering the P/E and making it seem like an even bigger bargain. In 1998, Gillette and Coca-Cola looked like great buys because they sold off several points and their P/Es looked more attractive. In actuality, the earnings growth in both companies showed material deceleration, which justified a lower P/E valuation. Much of this questionable method of P/E analysis is based on personal opinions and theories handed down through the years by analysts, academicians, and others who often have questionable track records when it comes to making money in the market. Reliance on P/E ratios often ignores more basic trends. For example, the general market may have topped out, in which case all stocks are headed lower. It's ridiculous and somewhat naive to say a company is undervalued because at one time it was 22 times earnings and it can now be bought for 15 times earnings. Another faulty use of price-earning ratios, by amateurs and professionals alike, is to evaluate stocks in an industry and conclude that the one selling at the cheapest P/E is always undervalued and therefore the most attractive purchase. The reality is that the lowest P/E usually belongs to the company with the most ghastly earnings record, and that's precisely why it sells at the lowest P/E. The simple truth is that stocks at any one time usually sell near their current value. The stock that sells at 20 times earnings is there for one set of market-determined reasons, and the stock that trades for 15 times earnings is there for another set of reasons. A stock selling at, say, 7 times earnings does so because its overall record is more deficient than a stock with a higher P/E ratio. Also keep in mind that cyclical stocks normally have lower P/Es. In good periods, they do not show the P/E expansion that happens in growth stocks. You can't buy a Mercedes for the price of a Chevrolet. Everything sells for about what it is worth at the time. If a company's price and P/E ratio change in the near future, it's because conditions, events, psychology, and earnings continue to improve or suddenly start to deteriorate as the weeks and months pass. Eventually, a stock's P/E will reach a peak, but this normally occurs when the general market averages are topping out and starting a significant decline. It could also be a signal that the stock is about to lose its earnings momentum. It is true that high P/E stocks will be more volatile, particularly if they are in the volatile high-tech area. The price of a high P/E stock can also get temporarily ahead of itself, but the same can also be said for lower P/E stocks. Chapter 3. N equals new products, new management, new highs. Buying at the right time. It takes something new to produce a startling advance in the price of a stock. It can be an important new product or service that sells rapidly and causes earnings to accelerate above previous rates of increase. Or it can be a change of management that brings new vigor, new ideas, or at least a new broom to sweep everything clean. New industry conditions, shortages, price increases, or revolutionary technologies, for example, can affect most stocks in an industry group in a positive way. In our study of the greatest stock market winners from 1952 through 2001, we discovered that more than 95% of stunning successes in American industry met at least one of the above criteria. One of the ways a company can achieve enormous success, thereby enjoying large gains in its stock price, is by introducing new products into the marketplace. We're not talking about a new formula for dish soap. These products and companies have to revolutionize the way we live. There is another fascinating phenomenon we found in the early stage of all winning stocks. We call it the Great Paradox. The staggering majority of individual investors, whether new or experienced, take delightful comfort in buying stocks that are down substantially from their peaks, thinking they're getting a bargain. Among the hundreds of thousands of individual investors attending my investment lectures in the 1970s, 1980s, and 1990s, 98% said they do not buy stocks that are making new highs in price. This phenomenon is not limited to individual investors. I have provided extensive research for more than 600 major institutional investors and have found that many of them are also bottom buyers. They, too, feel it's safer to buy stocks that look like bargains because they're either down a lot in price or actually selling near their lows. Our study of the greatest stock market winners proved, surprisingly, that the old adage, buy low, sell high, was completely wrong. In fact, our study proved the exact opposite. The hard-to-believe great paradox in the stock market is, what seems too high in price and risky to the majority usually goes higher, and what seems low and cheap usually goes lower. Are you finding this high-altitude paradox a little difficult to act upon? Let me cite another study we conducted. In this one, we analyzed two groups of stocks over many market periods, those that made new highs and those that made new lows. The results were conclusive. Stocks on the new high list tended to go higher in price, while those on the new low list tended to go lower in price. Based on our research, a stock on IBD's new price low list tends to be a pretty poor prospect and should be avoided. In fact, decisive investors should sell such stocks long before they get on the new price low list. A stock making the new high list, especially for the first time while trading on big volume during a bull market, might be a prospect with big potential. Ask yourself, what does a stock that has traded between $40 and $50 a share over many months and is now selling at $50 have to do to double in price? Doesn't it first have to go through $51, then $52, and $53, $54, $55, and so on, all new price highs, before it can reach $100? As a smart investor, your job is to buy when a stock looks too high to the majority of conventional investors, and sell after it moves substantially higher, and finally begins to look attractive to some of those same investors. If you bought Cisco at the highest price it ever sold for in 1990, when it just made a new high and looked scary, you would have enjoyed a nearly 75,000% increase from that point forward. Just because a stock is making a new price high does not necessarily mean it's the right time to buy. Using stock charts is an important piece of the stock selection process. A stock's historical price movement should be reviewed carefully, and you should look for stocks making new price highs as they break out of price consolidation areas, or bases. Why? Because this is the point where most really big price advances begin, and it is the time where the probability of a significant price move is the greatest. A sound consolidation or base-building period could last from 7 or 8 weeks up to 15 months, so some bases are short and some are longer time-wise. The perfect time is during a bull market, just as a stock is starting to break out of its price base. This is what is referred to as the pivot or buy point. You should avoid buying once the stock is more than 5% or 10% above the exact buy point off the base. Otherwise, your chance of getting shaken out in the next correction or pullback in price greatly increases. Chapter 4. S equals supply and demand, shares outstanding plus big volume demand. The law of supply and demand determines the price of almost everything in your daily life. At the grocery store, for instance, what you pay for your lettuce, tomatoes, eggs, and beef depends on how much of each item there is and how many people want these items. It impacted the price of food and consumer goods even in former communist countries. There, state-owned items were always in short supply, and often available only to the privileged class, or on the black market to those who could pay the exorbitant prices. This basic principle of supply and demand also applies to the stock market, where it is more important than all the analyst opinions on Wall Street. The price of a common stock, with 5 billion shares outstanding, is harder to budge because there's such a large supply. It takes a large volume of buying or demand to create a rousing price increase. On the other hand, if a company has only 50 million shares outstanding, a relatively small supply, just a reasonable amount of buying or demand can push the price up more rapidly. If you were choosing between two stocks to buy, one with 5 billion shares outstanding and the other with 50 million, the smaller one will usually be the better performer, if other factors are equal. However, since smaller capitalization stocks are less liquid, they can come down as fast as they go up, sometimes even faster. In other words, With greater opportunity comes significant additional risk. The total number of shares outstanding in a company's capital structure represents the potential amount of stock available. But market professionals also look at the floating supply, the shares left for possible purchase after subtracting stock that is closely held. Companies in which top management owns a large percentage of the stock, at least 2% to 3% in a large company and more in small companies, generally are your better prospects because they have a vested interest in the stock. There's another fundamental reason, besides supply and demand, why companies with a large number of shares frequently produce slower results. The companies themselves may be much older, growing at a slower rate, and simply too big and sluggish. During the 1990s, a phenomenon occurred where, for several years, big-cap stocks outperformed small-cap stocks. This was in part related to the size problem experienced by the mutual fund community that suddenly found itself awash in huge amounts of new cash as more and more people bought mutual funds. As a result, the industry was forced to buy bigger-cap stocks. It appeared that funds favored bigger-cap stocks because of the need to put more money to work. This was contrary to the normally favorable supply-demand effect found in smaller-cap stocks with fewer shares around to meet increases in investor demand. Big-cap stocks do have some advantages: greater liquidity, less downside volatility, better quality, and usually less risk. The immense buying power of large funds can make a top-notch big stock advance nearly as fast as shares of a smaller company. Great size may create seeming power and influence, but size in corporations can also produce a lack of imagination. Big companies are often run by older and more conservative caretaker management, less willing to innovate, take risks, and keep up with the times. In most cases, top managers of large companies don't own a lot of their company's stock. This is a serious defect that should be corrected, since it implies to the savvy investor that the company's management and employees don't have any personal